Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
We're flying without a net, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are on the Media Project. We have an opportunity to see if we can get by without the script, you know, that we usually follow, he said sarcastically.
David Christina, you know, our producer, is off somewhere far away across the waters.
Gallivanting someplace where he can get Guinness on tap.
Right. That's true. That's a hint.
Yes. It's a wonderful thing. But anyway, we are here. Stu Shinsky, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, is here.
Gentlemen, a pleasure.
It's wonderful to see you once again. Dr. Alan Shartok at the end of the table over here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, and we are the Media Project this week. And David, you know, usually prepares some content for us, and here this week Patrick Garrett has done that, but we're gonna ad lib.
There is some big news from my hometown of Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
My hometown, where all the children are above average.
That's
right?
True.
Yes, uh-huh.
And what's happened is that there is a corporation that bought a lot of newspapers, and now is having a little bit of problems with them. It's called Digital First.
Yes, this is the company that, for example, Ira Fussfeld works for, who's often here. It's the company that owns Troy and Saratoga Springs and
Kingston, New York.
And Oneida, New York, and a lot of papers, and the Denver Post, and a lot of papers.
And the Berkshire Eagle. Okay, so my paper, which, as you often point out, won a Pulitzer Prize in 1954.
Do I often play?
I always say a Pulitzer Prize winning paper, and Rex always says, yeah, 1954.
Right.
More than
whatever,
I've got.
That's whatever. Right, me too.
Or whatever it was. Okay, so anyway, the good people of the Berkshires got together, some very wealthy, in some cases, people, and they bought the Berkshire Eagle and it's a couple of companion papers.
Yeah.
And they're going to, quote, turn it around.
It's a wonderful thing, this notion of, don't you think, this notion of local ownership?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, that's how newspapers all began. We just celebrated the 160th anniversary of the Times Union, and 160 years ago, last week, three local printers in Albany got together and decided they're going to put out an independent paper, because back in those days, this was now, remember, 1856, the Republican Party had just been founded. The Whigs were in decline. The Democrats were, well, they were also in decline shortly. But all the papers were partisan. And these local guys came together and made a newspaper, and it has survived 160 years. So that is the way every newspaper began. Local entrepreneurs saying, I'm going to have a voice in my community.
And I love the idea of the names of the papers that have survived over the years. So, for example, I believe it's the Plattsburgh...
The Press Republican. Right.
And then I think Springfield has got a Republican.
I used to be the editor of the paper in Rensselaer, Indiana. It was called the Rensselaer Republican. And the owner of the Republican bought the Jasper County Democrat, which was the other paper in town. So basically the Republican bought out the Democrat. And it is always thus.
And always thus. Boy, you know, you speak in the old style, Rex, and I love it when you do. It's just wonderful.
Now, the contrary of this, actually, we'll get back to the Berkshire in just a minute, but the contrary is happening with Stu's company, which is the Gannett company.
The parent company of my operation, the Poughkeepsie Journal. Gannett is right now in negotiations with the Tribune Company, which is another legacy name, owner of the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, Orlando Sentinel, Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel, some others as well.
Hartford Current, right,
Allentown. Morning Call in Pennsylvania, where Gannett would acquire these newspapers, and if they did so, would end up with 125 newspapers overall or so.
And these are big name newspapers.
These are big city newspapers.
With great traditions of excellence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this comes after a deal that Gannett just completed literally last week to acquire the Journal Media Group out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Another great newspaper.
Which also has the Memphis Commercial Appeal, Knoxville News Sentinel, and all of this. This is the big company consolidation effort that is sort of the other trend in terms of the other more local ownership of newspapers coming back into
I have to say, I have to leapfrog on that, is the great name you just mentioned. We were just in Memphis 2 weeks ago, of the Memphis Commercial Appeal.
Yes.
Now, that's a great name for a newspaper.
Did not come up by a news guy, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, right, exactly not. Well, the first issue of the Albany Morning Times was entirely ads on the front page, except for serialized story, basically a novella started on the front page. No journalism on the front page at all until so that is what they were. They were commercial enterprises.
Yeah, they were printing companies.
So this basically. If this happens, I mean, a number of things would happen. Gannett would own Tennessee because, I mean, basically it would own all of Tennessee.
And Florida.
Interestingly, the former editor of USA Today, Ken Paulson, is dean of journalism now at, is it MT, Middle Tennessee, or is it?
Yeah, the Tennessee area, the Nashville area.
I mean, this basically, that would be a state that if Gannett decided to stand down or to fight on something.
Stand down, I tell you.
Tennessee would be Gannett's little pawn. And say again, the state of Florida.
State of Florida, where Gannett already has operations in Fort Myers, Tallahassee, Brevard, and the Melbourne area. This would also, in many ways, give them a great majority of Florida. The Gannett goal here, the stated goal, which has been said many times publicly, is they're creating something called the USA Today Network, where it'd be a national network, where it'd be local to national and national to local with USA Today as
our flagship. This really would have power for advertising more than for journalism, wouldn't it?
Very much so. Oh, definitely.
This is an advertising play.
You get a good rate if you buy in everything?
You can buy the whole country that way.
Yeah. Think digitally of it. And print.
Well, it's one of the reasons that WAMC does so well, and I never want to talk rich, but we do okay in terms of our underwriting.
Just little people. It's like Bernie Sanders.
Chairs are very comfortable, these chairs.
In terms of our underwriting program, because people get into 29 basic markets by buying this. So I'm sitting here with two guys, one of whom is one of the scions of the Gannett operation, the other of whom is, a son of Hearst. And so.
Would that I were a son of Hearst, literally speaking.
But last name Shinsky over here, not Gannett. We're poor Jews from Brooklyn.
Anyway, so we work for big companies. Yeah, I mean, Hearst is a major international, I mean, it's a global media thing, and then the newspaper enterprise is a rather small arm of it.
So basically, what's the economics of the situation, as my old friend used to say? What's the economics of this? Because we all hear again and again that newspapers are failing. And now we see from your company, Stu, this acquisition, this major acquisition of some of the biggest titles, as we say, in the country. And Rex, you guys are...
Well, actually, my company just bought another paper. Hearst just bought the Norwalk Hour in Connecticut.
Really?
So that makes five newspapers now in a cluster in Connecticut.
In Fairfield County, yes.
And the only difficulty here is if Gannett acquires the Hartford Courant, that puts those Hearst newspapers right between the Gannett paper in Westchester Rockland and the Hartford Courant.
Right.
And so there'd be a little squeeze there.
Well, there is some speculation that if Gannett does this deal, that they may take one or two or four or whatever of these assets and sell them off to a company where it might be a better geographic fit.
Sort of like organized baseball.
Sort of. And then maybe take those revenues and acquire something else. So if the Tribune deal with Gannett is done, there is speculation, and I'm certainly not an insider on the speculation, that there could be deals to follow.
How are you guys all making all this money, especially Gannett, that allows them to, buy all these things in a time when we keep hearing the newspapers are doing bad?
Well, one of the things with Gannett is that the Gannett that is today is not the Gannett from a couple of years ago, because the newspaper operation was spun off from, I think it was something around 60 television stations.
Yeah.
And the Gannett print operation that emerged with absolutely no debt.
Which is quite different from what happened to Tribune. They dropped all of the debt onto the heads of the Tribune newspapers when they spun off the broadcasting there. So Gannett, I guess, is taking on some debt here.
They would be,
but they can afford to.
They would be. And the Journal Media deal out of Milwaukee, that was the first debt, quote-unquote, that they incurred. And all, again, I'm an outsider in this. I don't have any specific details from the inside. The word that we hear is that the ratio of revenues to debt load is quite manageable. And not only that, there's further acquisitions that are coming, according to our company.
But understand how this has happened, Alan, to your question. How, when you say, you know, newspapers are quote, dying, we hear, the way that Tribune, for example, has managed its newsrooms in recent years is cut and cut and cut. And that's why the Los Angeles Times now becomes a more attractive property for Gannett to acquire, because the cost of operation is low. Recently, the Tribune, we noted on this show, Tribune had decided that all of its editors would take on the title of publisher.
Yes.
So this is not a not necessarily a healthy thing for newsrooms, you know, to cut so much of the producers. And that's what really raises a question about the viability of this, and comes back to what's going on at the Berkshire Eagle, because you cannot survive as a news enterprise if you're not producing unique content, if you're not giving people something that they can't get elsewhere. Why would they turn to you? And so the guy who is the leader of the individuals who are buying the group said, I'm going to bring more reporters. We're going to have more journalism. We're going to sell more advertising, right?
And good luck, Charlie.
Yeah.
I mean, great idea.
You got to pay for it.
You got to pay for it.
They also talked about, you know, using more citizen journalists. Now, first of all, the Eagle has always had a lot of citizen-type, you know, columns in it where people submit columns and get it done. Easier said than done, don't you think?
In terms of quality, especially,
yeah.
And we have found that out. We found that out 15 years ago when we started adding citizen bloggers, that folks are really happy to write their opinions. And most people, frankly, don't write opinions that are so compelling that everybody else wants to read them. We thought that the internet would give us the capacity, again, 15 years ago when this notion of internet journalism was new, we thought it would give us the capacity to have citizens in every community writing their own accounts of what went on. Citizens would go to the town board meeting in East Greenbush and write about it, and they would go to the maybe even the courthouse and write about it. And that's not what happens. Folks write their biased point of view. There is no substitute for real professional journalism.
Or remembering my father, or remembering my mother, or, you know, like that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You get a lot of that,
you know,
stuff.
Or my dog, I write on all of those things. Yeah.
Gannett's initiative through our company, and one of the reasons that they are looking at these acquisitions is our number one newsroom priority is investigative reporting.
Uh-huh.
The number one, to differentiate ourselves from, there's this little social event over here. And we still cover many community events, but we also have ramped up with our investigative team. So
yes, you have. Actually, I've really noticed that on your website. You have some really strong investigative pieces there.
You win a lot of prizes.
We are very fortunate that our work has been recognized.
But that takes time and effort. How
and
do you...
money.
How do you do that? So you've had
we
to sacrifice.
It. We have said, no, we're not going to do this anymore. And stuff that used to be maybe a 25-inch story, maybe we just cover with a photo that is submitted by an
event
organizer.
So Board of Education meeting, for example?
We check agendas, but frankly, we rarely go. Uh-huh. Unless there's a topic that hits on a trend, has to do with a an ongoing issue, or is something that we feel is just deserving of the public being in the know.
And this
but
is
just
hard.
The wake up and go to the meetings, not anymore.
It's hard because, you know, as reporters, we were trained to go to cover everything, to blanket cover it,
right.
Because, you know, there may not be a daily story in that school board meeting, but you'll pick up something, you'll meet a source, you'll pick up something that will become a bitter story.
Right.
And so, you know, as a young reporter, I tried to cover everything on my beat, and that is still the inclination of a lot of reporters.
It is, but what's happening these days, at least in what we've seen, is that social media connections have replaced a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have reporters with, you know, 2,000, 3,000 Facebook friends. And yes, they meet some at some meetings, but, you know, social media is connections in real time that, frankly, give you more frequent communication than at a board meeting once a week.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, that's interesting.
But we haven't figured it all out yet, have we, guys? I mean, we really don't know what these relationships between print and social media and the media and the stuff that you guys put up in the middle of the night. Because as I've said so many times, I go to sleep, and I wake up twice, I read the New York Times twice, and sometimes the Times Union, too. And once I think I read the Poughkeepsie Journal in the middle of the night. And then I said that only to make
you and me both.
Only to make Stu feel good. Okay, and so, but in the morning, what I read in the middle of the night has nothing to do with what's on the front page of the New York Times from the day before. That's a tough one for you to figure.
And this is what's hard, I think it's hard for the commendable goal of the people in Berkshire County who want to take take their newspaper that has been owned by, frankly, a not very good operation for a number of years. They want to take this local. I think it's a wonderful thing, but they're going to find, I think, that it's really hard to deliver that unique content that people want.
Well, you know, Rex, the devil is always in the details. So you get a group of people, some very good people. I know them quite well. A guy by the name of Bob Wilmers and several others who really want to help. So yeah. They do it. So they get together and they do it. But I have seen this before. What ends up happening is Robert Michels, the brilliant sociology, wrote, you know, a book on the iron law of oligarchy, that where it's a communal effort, it turns out that somebody takes over.
Uh-huh.
Somebody sort of takes over.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the motivation of the person who is pushing to become the head cat, that's always somewhat suspicious because, as my twin brother Lewis has put it so many times, the worst reason to be on a board is bloodlust. So, in other words, you know what I'm saying here.
Yeah. And the difficulty, too, is that the demographic that wants a print newspaper is shrinking, is dying.
It is.
And so if you're not doing the very aggressive digital conversion as the Stewart's Gannett company is, you're really digging your own grave. And yet the revenue from digital is not as strong, and it's harder to figure out. It's really this calculation between how much do you give away and how much do you put behind the paywall.
And kind of standalone operation. Is there enough gravitas there? You can put the money in, but are you going to be able to draw it out as well?
Well,
these are business guys and they're going to answer that question.
Yeah, but you know, I have a feeling that they're doing it because it's just the right thing. I don't think they're doing it.
You don't think they necessarily want to make money?
No.
Oh.
Anyway, they would probably argue with that. But my suspicion is they're trying, most of them are, with a possible exception, most of them are, trying to do the right thing for the right principled reasons. And that becomes very close to the model, Rex, you've talked about so many times, which is a not-for-profit.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, if these are very well...
Intentionally not-for-profit, not those that are not-for-profit because they can't turn it.
Such as Philadelphia just did
like
that.
Like Philadelphia, exactly. Yeah. Philadelphia is a great example of a great newspaper. I mean, there was a time 15 years ago when the Philadelphia Inquirer was winning Pulitzer Prizes hand over fist. Every single year when Gene Roberts was the editor, they would win Pulitzers. It was probably the most desired newsroom in America for a young journalist to work in. And Philadelphia has really fallen on hard times, the newspaper. But the two are under the same ownership, the Philadelphia Daily News, the Inquirer, and their website, philly.com. And that has just gone back into private hands.
Yes.
That was quite
and
a
And why did
big
it go
transition.
Back into private hands?
Because
it didn't work in public hands.
Yeah, the previous owners couldn't make money on it.
Yeah.
And
so if the assumption is we're going to make a lot of money, that's one thing. If the assumption is we want to provide a good product here, we can finance it, and maybe everybody we'll have a theater party at the end of every year, you know, or a little gala with some extra money into it.
But, you know, to the point you made about not-for-profits, we have had, there has been conversation about the emerging model of not-for-profit journalism, newsrooms that, and there are a lot of foundation-funded newsrooms. Texas Tribune, for example, is doing a great job down in Texas, and ProPublica is having a great impact and doing investigative journalism that runs around the country and has recently, again, won more Pulitzer Prizes.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the model. Maybe, who knows, maybe WAMC and other public radio stations have been the forerunners of this all along, and this is the way forward.
Yeah, well, the old saying goes, they who is there first wins. So it's great to have been in the forefront of all of this as others come around to our way of thinking. Although, if others do it, then we might have to share the public money that would ordinarily
that
come
would be,
to do this.
That's right. But and in terms of who was there first, I go back to my 160-year-old newspaper.
Yes, you were.
160 plus a week. And pointing out that is one of the elements that sustains us because the Times Union leapt onto the digital exchange a lot more quickly than other media around here. And that's why TimesUnion.com is by far the dominant digital play in the capital region, with numbers that actually compare to the national giants, Google and Yahoo, in this community. So that was a smart move by my predecessor. And
have you figured it all out, though? In other words, have
no.
you? No.
Nobody has.
You haven't really.
Nobody has.
We're trying. trying. You know, the Hearst newspapers, what we're doing is we're putting the significant journalism content, as Stu says, you know, people will pay for investigative reporting, enterprise stuff. Yeah. We're putting that behind a paywall within our own site, within TimesUnion.com. At the other Hearst papers, the experiment is two separate sites. So if you go to San Francisco, you've got sfgate.com, which is the longstanding, lively website that captures the zeitgeist of the community of San Francisco.
I like it.
So that's the Chronicle's free site, but you also have sanfranciscochronicle.com, which has the real great journalism, and you have to pay for that. Same thing happens in Houston and San Antonio. That's the model for the other Hearst newspapers.
But you really haven't yet figured out how to make people pay the same rates for advertising on your web pages as you do with your print media, because they won't do it.
Because the inventory is so high. It's simple economics, the law of supply and demand, because there are so many ways to reach people. The inventory of available advertising on the web is vast. It is unlimited. So, of course, you can't get as much money for that, whereas in print advertising, it remains, if you want to give print advertising to people, you really want to go to our specific newspapers, because we do have market dominance in print in our own particular areas.
You know, Rex and Stu, I've always thought that the real reason that people won't pay for the electronic the same way they'll pay for the print is you can't cut it out and send it to your mother.
You can digitally. You can email articles and stuff, but does mom have the computer, I guess is the question.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how old your mom is, you know?
And even on the revenue side, it's still an area of innovation. I mean, there's experiments out there where you pay 10 cents to view this article, or 75 cents to see this, or $1.50 for this week, or it is all sorts of revenue models out there. It's not like, here's a dollar, here's 50 cents, here's 25 cents, I'm buying a newspaper. We have what's known as a content subscription. We don't refer to it as a paywall. When you subscribe to the Poughkeepsie Journal, this is very fancy, Rex. I didn't think of it.
Content subscription.
You get access to the printed Poughkeepsie Journal. You get access to PoughkeepsieJournal.com. You get access to our electronic edition, which is a replica of the print edition. You get access to all of our apps and things like that. Now, you can also buy a digital-only subscription. You can buy 7 days a week of print. You can buy combinations. But what you cannot do is, in essence, I want to read that one article. Here's 25 cents. And that's something that I think the industry still has to figure out is the current model for payment for viewing content, is that the model that's going to endure?
And I love the concept of combinations. As you know, Danny Kaye saying a man bought a combination suit of underwear. He wore it 9 months without a single tear. He wore it 9 months without exaggeration, but when he tried to get it off, why? He forgot the combination. Sorry, Stu, as soon as you said the word.
What?
Danny Kaye. Yeah, that could be a media project first, a Danny Kaye reference, famous actor. That was cool. I like that.
Great Danny Kaye joke, cool. But you'll have to write to media@wamc.org to get it.
Alan at wamc.org.
Alan Shartok, Stu Shinsky, the Poughkeepsie Journal, Rex Smith at the Times Union here for you. You know, by the way, how you figure out what people are going to want to pay for. I was just at a conference where we talked all day about metrics. And, you know, there are different digital metrics available to us. You can get a lot more information now. Metrics that will tell you what it is that people like, what they're reading right now in real time. Chartbeat, for example, is software that you can look at your website and see exactly, wow, look at the numbers on that particular story. And so you elevate it higher on the website, perhaps. And there are metrics for advertisers. And one of the key elements that people have to figure out is one of the reasons that it's so hard for newspapers to sustain great journalism on the web is because advertising tends to be sold based upon page views. And that is how many people are clicking on something. And so page views, people are always going to go for the jazzy stuff. They're always going to go for that bikini shot or the photo gallery of the latest gala. And therefore, if you're selling on page views, you're almost always driving clickbait, frankly. So we have to get different
metrics. You said clickbait. I just want to make sure I understand what clickbait is.
Clickbait. So it's stuff that it's just so attractive that they have to click on it.
Very enticing, you know.
Yeah. You know, the 13 celebrities who look much worse than they used to, you'll be amazed at number 11.
Yes.
You know,
so
I'm clicking all through this.
Also known as,
it doesn't quite work. It never quite works when you do that.
Well, yes, it's the load time
is
terrible. It works well enough that you're opening the ad and the ads pop up. But you're right. It's really annoying. It's terrible stuff.
And even in, it's not as blatant as that, but newsrooms put up photo galleries. High school basketball game. Here's 25 photos. Is it as, you know, perhaps as sexy as, you know, young ladies in bikinis or men in Speedo? No, but people people will look at that and it's legitimate journalism.
Yep.
So there is clickbait that is responsible journalism as well.
It's interesting you say that because I'd love to know whether people, you said young ladies in bikinis or men in Speedos.
Or puppies.
But now, with Rex's demographic material and all of that stuff, you can tell whether they would rather watch men in Speedos or women in bikinis. I know what I would rather watch.
Well, we're glad to know that, Alan, and we think we know what you mean. So
again, that's Alan at WAMC.org.
We got to go. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. It's all over. All right. With gratitude to Patrick Garrett for producing and David Gustina's absence this week, Alan Shartok, Stu Shinsky, and Rex Smith, thanks for joining us on the
meeting. Readers get that payoff. What a headache. What a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.